condemned ate a hearty meal.
What?
It's an American tradition from my time. A prisoner condemned to death is allowed to request whatever he wants for his last meal.
Whatever he wants?
Within reason. I've heard it's often something they remember from their childhood. Something their mother made them.
What would you choose?
Cheeseburger, fries, and a Coke from Carmi's. It's a diner. A restaurant I used to take Bree to when she was little. And that was our regular order.
I wouldn't choose any other thing than this very meal. For you. In our home.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Stars.
Sing me a song of a loss that is gone. Say, could that loss be I? Mary of souls, she sailed on a day.
Back. My name is Mary Larson.
Oh, my name is Blake. And as I just told all the people that were at the live pre-show, I'm sad. Wicked sad.
But we get to carry on and still have some Outlander newness and goodness.
We get to soldier on.
We do get to soldier on.
Oh, thank you, Frank, for those wise words.
You know, it's sad when a season ends, particularly a short season.
Yes.
But what I do love is the conversations that we as a fandom get to have. And that's really what this podcast is all about. And what, of course, the subsequent episode we're going to be coming out with, the listener feedback episode, will be all about. It's about digesting it. It's about pulling out the bits and pieces that we loved or made us feel not so happy. You know, things like that, that make this show more than just an hour that we watch on television. And that's what Outlander's done. It's captivated us from around the world over these six seasons and beyond. You know, people have been traveling the globe right now to be with fellow Outlander fans and meet different people from the show. And, you know, people have had friendships and travels and started relationships all through this in different ways. And I love when you do come to a close of a season because it gives you this time to reflect. It's kind of like graduating high school. You know, you sit back and yes, it's sad, but you get to reflect on where it's brought you and where it's brought our beloved, you know, just cast and these wonderful characters that we love. And obviously leaving off on a cliffhanger, we're not done.
Oh, that's a smoking cliffhanger.
We are not done. So
that's a cliffhanger to end all cliffhangers.
It truly, truly is. So we have a little bit of a recap in case y'all listening to this in the future. Because you know everybody watching live.
Yes.
They've just watched it and rewatched it and rewatched it within the past 24 hours a million times. So we all know what just happened. But for the people in the future who may have seen this and need a little bit of a recap of what just happened in the finale of season six, we've got some astute notes from Angela Hickey, cast one of our esteemed bloggers at outlandercast.com. Of course, the Queen Bee in the book club. So Blake, take it away.
Okay. We end an excellent season with this outstanding episode, a rare five kilt from me that delivered all the feels. Wait, hold on. Time out. Is she writing a five kilt from me just to have me say that it was a five kilt, a rare five kilt from me? Angela, I know you're here. I ask you, come up to the podium and tell me that this was done purposely. That we had delivered all the feels, heart-stopping action, tender moments from the Frasers and the Max, and smoke and sex scenes, trauma revelations, thrills, anxiety, teamwork, and hope. We pick up right where we left off with the Frasers in deep shite that just gets deeper.
True.
The Brown posse surrounds the house, and Jamie tells Browns that he won't give Claire up, period. Brown amps up for war, and Mrs. Bug, Lizzie, and Twizzy sneak off to get help. Claire has gone from a woman afraid to enter her surgery last episode to this week's Bonnie Parker meets Calamity Jane. She gets guns and comes back up to an armed brown turd entering through the back who... turd entering through the back. I see what you did there, Angela. Who demands her weapon? She begins to hand it over, then quick draw McGraw's hits him in a very badass move. Jamie is jumped, and Claire starts covering Jamie's retreat back to the house. And then all hell breaks loose. Bullets flying, glass breaking, tables flipping, and an epic heart-pounding shootout with Team Fraser working together like a well-oiled machine. Jamie has a surprise armory built up in his basement. The King of Men has kept up on his doomsday prep for the war. Jamie says Brown found out that Marshall Lee killed Lionel. Wait, what? When? How? Now I'm worried about them, too. When Brown tries to con Jamie with, well, you won't hurt him. We just want to get her a failed trial.
You got to say with his voice.
Sure. We won't. I don't know. I can't even do it.
We won't hurt her.
We just want a fair trial.
There you go.
You have to talk with you have a lemon in your mouth.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Jamie answers by shooting his hat out of his hand. They cease for the night, have some lovely dinner in the last meal of conversation. Jamie says they will likely try to burn them out. Could this be predicted? The fire they die in. The Fisher folk show up yelling nasty stuff. Crombie and the Frasers come out to talk. We find out Alan and the one informing Brown. Crombie suggests that both the Frasers grow so Jamie can protect her. Finally, the Ardsmuir men show up, but it's still not enough. And Jamie reluctantly agrees, knowing it's likely their end. But they will meet it. Together. Out of nowhere, an unexpected ally arrives, Tom Christie. He will go as well to ensure no more evil takes place, and they will leave in the morning. Brown is not pleased. His gang expected murder, mayhem, and looting, and not a long, drawn-out, chaperoned trip across the lawless colony. That night, Jamie tries to soothe Claire by telling her about a fortune teller who told him he had 9 lives. He had a few left, and after a session of last night on Earth, Rumpy Pumpy, the Frasers head out on a road trip from hell. Meanwhile, the Max parallel the Frasers with their own road trip beast. It's also a contrast journey of peace, joy, and hope. They talk about the safety from the war, parenting trips for time travelers, and their cozy, crazy journey together so far. The night, hashtag kinky Roger, my favorite side of Roger. I can't believe those words just came out of my mouth.
I can. Yeah. Thank you, Angela.
Uses his newly made vroom to explore breeze terrain. This leads to some Vera sexy rumpy. The next day, they check out Fergus's newspaper while Jimmy tells his sibling to be, I love you, baby. Aww. Bree discovers lice on Jimmy, and it's revealed that Jimmy has a hereditary birthmark identical to Roger's. Tears of joy for Roger and Bree. Things are not so great, though, on Fraser's road trip. They are now heading across the colony to the coast because the rule of the English legal has broken down with the onset of the war. It's May 1775. The only thing keeping the Browns from killing the Frasers is Tom's haggard and grief-stricken presence. He even gives Claire his own serving of stew. Brown trashes the Frasers' reputation as they go, which ends up getting them surrounded and stoned. Tom saves them again. Brown has had enough and concocts a plan. They tell Jamie to get drinks and seize him. Tom demands answers. Brown says Jamie will be fine. They are just sending him home. Claire begs Tom to save Jamie, but Tom sticks by Claire. They take Claire to Wilmington and lock her in jail. Brown bribes the sheriff while Tom reassures her. Meanwhile, Jamie opens his eyes, tied to a pole at the beach. Brown has bribed the merchant to transport Jamie to Scotland. As one of the gang lifts his gun to knock Jamie out, an arrow strikes the guy dead. Ian, Chief Bird, and Cherokee Rain bullets and arrows on the gang and run them down with tomahawks. The last guy has a gun on Jamie, and in the best move ever, Jamie says, wait, he knows where Claire is. The guy smiles through, thinking he is safe. Ian also smiles. We know too, Uncle, and the bird shoots him in the eye through his hand. Awesome. Jamie is free, and they are off to rescue Claire. Sadly now, Troutlander begins.
Dun, dun, dun.
That is the recap.
Well, thank you again so very much, Angela, for recapping us. Now, before we get into the rest of the show, we have a wee favor, friends. If you tune in via YouTube or Facebook or any of the other forms. Oh, by the way, Blake, do you want to go live on Instagram? Are we live on Instagram?
Yes, we are.
Oh, cool. I just don't see any of the comments.
Oh,
there.
Sorry. I didn't bring it up.
Hi, Instagram friends. You do want to make sure that you are subscribed. There they are. You do want to make sure that you are subscribed to our podcast in your favorite podcatcher of choice. That way,
you'll be able to get, you know, little notifications when new episodes come out. Hopefully during Droughtlander, we'll be able to do some interviews or some kind of, you know, dives into other aspects. Maybe it's the soundtrack or other things about this particular season. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll do a history podcast because I know Blake loves to talk about the history of early America. So make sure you go and you hit that subscribe button. You could follow Blake and I on all sorts of social medias. Make sure you're hitting those follow buttons, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter. Just search Marian Blake.
All right, Marvin, are you ready to get into this episode?
I am.
Let's do it. All right, Marvin, this episode, the season 6 finale, is entitled I Am Not Alone. Those words are not uttered necessarily in this episode, but it is a contrasting title in that most of the episode, they are alone, Claire and Jamie, rather, though they have each other, but at the end, Claire does have Tom, and at the same time, Jamie does have Chief Bird and all the Cherokee, as well as Ian, who come to his rescue. So it is a little bit of a contrasting title, though it is made true by episode's end, which is quite nice. The writer was Luke Skelhas in, I think, what might be the surprise of the century. Luke Skelhas is helming the finale of season 6 for Outlander, which I definitely did not see coming. This would feel like a Matt or Tony episode, but Luke Skelhas gets the tap. And his past episodes include Heaven and Earth, The Bakra, Wilmington, The Depot, Koa, Between Two Fires, Free Will, Hour of the Wolf, and obviously this episode, I Am Not Alone. The director, once again, of course, oh, if I could just have him direct every single episode of Outlander, if it were not for Anna Forster, then I would do it. It is Jamie Payne, because he gets it. And he gets it because we've seen his past episodes, Free Will, The Company We Keep, Journey Cake, Never My Love, and Sticks and Stones. So that is that, Marvin. Your boring details that you always love. That's the end of that. What do you got for your kilt rating for this episode?
Dun, 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 dun. Of course, friends who are joining us live, we want to know your kilt rating. So the kilt rating, of course, is how we rate this episode on a scale of 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Kilts, and we just make it out of kilts because that's super fun and that's yes. How we like to roll. So I'm giving this episode 5.
Okay.
I really enjoyed this finale. I know that there's a cliffhanger. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I loved the music. Mm-hmm. I especially loved it. The second subsequent watch is just, you get to notice a bit more things, but I will get into why I loved it so much in a hot second in my GVG. So friends who are joining in live, let us know your kilt rating. Blake, how about you?
All right, so as an episode of television unto itself, just an episode of television, I quite enjoyed it. It was patient with itself. It allowed itself to breathe. I'm giving it as an episode. I'm going to have 2 ratings for you. As an episode of television, I'm giving it a 4.5. I think it was good. I think it lagged in certain places, which takes it down a few notches, and I think the contrasting story with Roger and Bree contributes to that as well. But there is some amazing stuff to really love, especially that final scene.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was quite good. And that, I think, brings it to the level. And of course, Jamie Payne too. Jamie, the way he uses colors and uses the darkness of what, you know, the phrases are going in.
Mm-hmm.
It makes for a visually dynamic episode.
Agreed.
Again, bringing it up to the level that it deserves.
Yeah.
But as a finale to a season, I have to go as my second rating, as a finale.
Second rating? When have we ever done this?
Because I said I have 2 ratings. As a finale, I'm going to give it a 4. 399, right around there.
Oh my God.
And it's, again, it's not that it's a bad episode. It's not a finale.
Well, it's a cliffhanger finale.
Yeah, but it's not a finale.
Is that their fault, or is it the fault that they only had 8 episodes?
It is their fault.
Why?
Because they have to plan that out.
Oh my gosh, Blake. Oh, them's fighting words, and you're going to be getting a lot of the fighting, I think, in our listener feedback when people need to question you on that. Am I right, friends in the live chat? Let's move on so I can sprinkle in some goodness. Of course, this is time for our GBG. This is the good and the bad and the great of the episode.
Okay,
and friends joining us live, we want to see. We want to see your GBGs. So my good is actually the title card. When we're in that diner, and the camera's pulling on up, and you see a character of what essentially is supposed to be Claire and Bree. Mm-hmm. Bree has a little menu in front of her face, and they're getting their burgers and Coke and fries. Mm-hmm. And Claire's in her red dress, and she's got her wedding ring on.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, she tells Jamie about your last dinner and how that's what she would want. It was all these wonderful memories. And, you know, I hearkened back to the season finale of season 5 with Claire with the same style of hair, with the red dress. And it made me think, like, obviously Claire isn't in the same situation that she was in, per se, last season finale. She isn't, sadly, you know, kidnapped and, well, she is, never mind, she is kidnapped, but she's not being sexually assaulted this time. Right. So, but it's still by a Brown. Still by a Brown.
Yeah.
Okay. And she's still away from Jamie, and she still is in these deep, dark points. So it was making me think, could Claire be in jail having escapism dreams right now again?
Yeah.
In the diner.
Yeah. I think there's definitely room for that, Mary.
And like, how beautiful that season 5 mirrored this slightly in just the littlest bit, in just the title card. Like, a lot of people might have even missed it. You know, they'd been like, oh yeah, that's cute. But, oh, like, just so good. So, so good that it had to make my GBGs. And I know it's something small, but I had to mention it. My bad. Okay, are two things. My bad is how I felt seeing this beautiful big house be shattered to bits and pieces throughout this entire episode. So once again, it's not bad writing or bad directing or anything like that. This is how it made me feel. I felt badly watching this gorgeous house that we've been able to share meals in and see, you know, relationships blossom or arguments happen in. But we've all been in awe of the Fraser's big house.
Mm-hmm.
It's so beautiful, right? And to just see it being shot and broken and bits and pieces, it just broke my heart. You know, we were all there with Claire when she said, we have a really beautiful home. And we're like, yeah, you do. Mm-hmm. Now there's bullet holes everywhere. My nitpicky bad, however.
Sure.
You know how I do this thing where I tell you something and then you can't unsee it?
Oh, yes.
Okay, here it is, friends.
What do you got? What is it?
When you rewatch this episode and they are cutting off Jimmy's beautiful hair, mm-hmm. and they're finding his little birthmark, supposedly Roger touches his head,
mm-hmm.
and says like, oh yeah, no worries about it. It's totally fine. And when the male hand is touching Jimmy's head,
mm-hmm.
looks authentic. Okay. Got dirt into those fingernails and around those cuticles like mm-hmm. that. Those are like dirty hands. And then when the shot goes back out to the 3-shot of the family, you look at Rick Rankin's perfectly manicured hands.
I know.
No cuticles showing. Not even a bit of white.
Not
because
a callus.
It's been, oh, you know he gets his regular mani-pedis.
Not a callus to be seen for days.
And so it was just, for me, jarring, where I think because Jimmy's hair is just this beautiful, clean blonde, and you got to see these, like, they look like Murtaugh hands. You know what I mean? I feel like that would explain it. It went from, like, Murtaugh hands to Rick Rankin, photographer in a New York photo exhibit hands.
Hitting on my wife hands.
No, he
did. He
appreciated that I enjoyed dancing.
Rick,
he's not listening, Blake. He's getting a manicure.
Be careful when you're around me next time there, Rick.
Okay, so then my great... I'm sorry. I'm going to like... people need to let us know when you see that scene, though.
Yes.
My great was that shot at the end. Was the music. Bear flare all over the place. Just boom, boom, boom. Jamie and the Cherokee and Ian. Oh, my gosh. Just everybody on their horses sweeping. Got to go save Claire. I felt like Jamie was off to go save Claire from Blackjack Randall, who's not even here anymore.
Yeah, right.
It was so sweepingly beautiful and reminiscent to how I felt in the early seasons. We had the bagpipes playing. We just had this whole like swelling feeling of he will find her no matter the time or place. And I just loved that. So that was my great. Blake, go for it. GBG.
All right, my good. I have a tie for my good. First is seeing the damage in Wilmington, where when they finally arrived,
and Claire's doing her little peeking.
Yes, and the show is showing you the disruption of the world at that moment. A city like Wilmington, you know, one of the jewels of that area, is falling apart, and the graffiti on the walls, it's not in your face. It's just that Claire looks through her little shadow. I mean, her little not shadow, Blake. What am I thinking? The little sheet as she's prying open the opening of the carriage, and it's just there.
The sheet.
Yeah, the sheet. Sure, whatever. The canvas, if you will. And the show isn't like, the show isn't telling you, oh, there is just so much. There's not like a voiceover telling you that all the problems. It's just that Claire sees it as you see it, and you see it as Claire sees it. There's no explanation. It's just you have to pay attention and in order to get that. And I really, 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 really love that. The other good for me was when Claire is looking at the house as she and Jamie take off, and Jamie can sense that, like, she's looking at it like this is the last time she's ever going to see it, and he tells her, hey, this is, you know, we're not, this isn't the last time we're going to see it by moonlight, it's going to be totally fine. Like, and it's just this look that Kat has as Claire has as she just looks at it, like, it's just such a somber thing.
Yeah. We all felt that way in our guts.
Right, right. My bad. Okay. So I feel like this episode is not a finale. And.
But it is.
But it's not. and it's a finale in name only.
Correct. Okay.
And I do love, actually, I quite like cliffhangers with when they're. With the intent of I like cliffhangers that have intent, not just for the sake of being a cliffhanger. I feel like this episode kind of straddles both. And having said that, the reason why I give this episode a 4.5 as an episode unto itself is because everything is great with Jamie and Claire. The sex scene, the small talks, the action, it's all great. Where it lacks is the stuff with Roger and Bree, in my opinion.
Okay.
The only thing that I feel like the show is trying to make Roger and Bree the same level as Jamie and Claire, and they're just not.
I don't think they're trying to do that, but
I did like the revelation of Jamie being Roger's kid. Like, okay, that's all great stuff. But I just, my sense is the middle of the episode when you could probably remove most of the middle and nothing changes. Like that big, long stretch of traveling and the big, long stretch of traveling with Roger and Bree, just nothing changes. So that's my bad. The great, though, I actually have a three-way tie. A three-way tie. I think this is an Outlander cast first.
I will just say that there's another season coming and, you know, it's not nothing. They don't put it there for no reason.
First of all.
So you'll come back to this. When season 7 happens, you'll be like, okay, I understand why there was all that Roger Bree stuff.
My first great is the shot through the hand. Again, you know when you're seeing good TV or when you're seeing something like when you're seeing something that pushes the envelope. Again, I always go back to Malva Weird when she gets up on her tippy toes. You knew when you watched that, you were like, ooh, yes.
That's what I want to interview. Moment. I want to interview the person who made that shot happen.
Yes.
It's probably a CGI thing.
So
get it? CGI.
I loved the fact that they had this little detail of shooting through the hand and into the guy's eye. Great little detail. That's a stand-up moment when that happens. My other great is the motif of all the shattered glass.
Yes.
Jamie Payne makes it a purpose to show shattered glass multiple times throughout this episode. And not just like, oh, a passing glance. Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, it just happens to be there. Oh, no. It is full of intent, and it is part of the visual storytelling that the show is trying to give us.
What? Yes. I feel like I am taking all of the book readers' feelings about your bad, and I'm just containing it for a little bit. Kind of like a nuclear reactor, but that's okay.
Sure. Well, don't go Chernobyl on me.
I'm not.
I loved the glass. I loved all of it because it represented what is happening to the Fraser family. It represented what's happening to the house, how the situation between Jamie and Claire is being shattered, and it is just strewn about. Everybody in the Fraser family is strewn about, mm-hmm. just like all the glass. It is a perfect motif that Jamie Payne, once again in his greatness, decides to utilize. And again, every single shot, every single word, everything has to be there with a purpose. And Jamie Payne gets it. In my other great, my third great, and this is why I played this at the top of our episode. We all know that Claire is not going to die. We all know that Jamie is not going to die, right? We just know it. Because if they do, this show's over. And we know that there's going to be a season 7.
They have to die at some point.
I know. And that's when this show's going to end. What I'm saying is, we know a season 7's coming, and like when she's being carted off in the wagon, like I know she's gonna be okay. When Jamie is on the beach, I know he's gonna be okay. However, the great are the moments between the two that are shared, that are small, when they themselves consider their fate. Right, because they don't know they're not gonna die, but we do. But it's these moments where Jamie is what?
Yeah, where Claire's like, it's okay. It's okay. The paper said that we die much later. And Jamie's like, yeah, newspapers are always wrong, Claire. Right, may die tomorrow.
Yes. Like there are moments shared between Jamie and Claire that are very special. Mm-hmm. And the one that I want to call out is Jamie saying, yeah, you know, like, I'd be totally happy right now if this was my last meal. Mm-hmm. It's not Jamie saying, we're going to be okay or we're going to die. It's, hey, if this happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But it's a moment of truth between two characters who don't know their fate, even though we do. That exploration is a fantastic, fantastic exploration between two characters.
I just love all your fantastics and perfects and amazings, and you gave it a low score.
Well, if you'd like, I can explain it, Marvin.
No, I don't need to explain.
Because
I just think you're a pessimist, and I've known this about you ever since we got together.
No, because I think the things that it does...
we all know, Blake.
I think the things that it does poorly, it does very poorly. And I think the things that it does great, it does very great. Just like last episode. There's so much to love about last episode, and there's just so much to be disappointed in my opinion.
And of course, we all need to keep in mind that this is just Blake's opinion. Some people can like chocolate, and others like vanilla. And right now, you're just on the chocolate train.
Listen, a 4-5 is it's actually, I think, the best rating this entire season that I've given.
Okay.
So it's that's a respectable kilt rating.
Awesome.
Where the show doesn't live up to its expectations is the fact that it's not a finale. And if they're using it as a finale, then it's not a then it's not a good finale.
Okay, well, I disagree, but
okay.
Okay, so want to jump in to the show discussion?
Yes.
Are you done with your GBGs?
Yes, I'm done with the GBGs.
Where you just continue to have more and more and more and more greats?
Okay, fine.
We don't need it.
Let me just say what I want to say, and then did this season? Actually, you know what? Do you want to start? Do you want to have a conversation about the season? I just want to talk about the darn show.
All right, show.
Go ahead.
Okay, Mrs. Bug, slowest person ever. Pregnant Lizzie, slowest person ever. What the heck? How far away do these people live?
Pretty far.
The fisher folk made it all over there.
Oh, they were doing double time to get to that place.
I'm just getting rid of like the lower people so we could talk about the meat and potatoes in a hot second. However, that fisher folk woman that comes up, burn the witch. She's the same woman who put down Henri Christian.
Really?
Yes.
Huh, interesting.
Why are these people allowed to still be free? The Fraser's tenants? Like, you suck. Get off my land. You're done. Go find some other ridge.
Yeah. And all the fisher folk just...
Seriously.
What if you don't like the Fraser so much...
Jamie is the most patient landlord.
Get him off.
Goodbye.
Get him off the land. Get the pink slips out. Okay?
Yes. Get Lord John Grey to bring over some beautiful, what's that thing when you have the nice official stuff, the letterhead? Mm-hmm. You know Lord John Grey would give Jamie letterhead for his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Write it on there. You're officially evicted. Goodbye.
And you know he gave him the stamp thing, too.
Oh, he did give him a wax seal.
Of course he did.
Oh, I totally agree.
Of course he did.
So we, of course, have Jamie and Claire.
Veronica says she's a colonial Karen.
She is a colonial Karen. Well done. She reminded me of the lady that is the partner of Cogsworth in the live-action Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
And when he comes back to human and he's like, oh my God, I have to be back with this woman. Yeah. She reminded me a lot of that person.
Okay, yep.
So I just, you know, we of course get to be in this big, big, giant, beautiful house. We have not only all the glass breaking and the bullets coming in, but you see Claire running through the house, locking several doors, several shutters.
Oh yeah, ready to go.
Really to remind you, though, of how big this house is. And to me, that signified how big their family is. You know, we do have Fergus and Marcelly in New Bern. And Jamie thankfully says, I'm glad nobody's here because all the kids would have been here. All the wee ones are gone, you know. And so I thought it was really interesting to kind of have that come to Jamie's forefront. Once again, the tourist in him saying, yeah, we've got Mrs. Bug, who's slow as molasses. Mm-hmm. Lizzie, who's pregnant, probably like stopping to have sex, you know. Who knows what Lizzie's doing? Lizzie, though, comes through. They all do. It's fine. But just this big empty house, and it's like empty nesters. And this is what happens when you get an empty nest. Do you think you're going to retire and relax and have a quiet home? No. The jabronis are going to come and shoot at you.
The jabronis.
Something that was a little hard for me.
Okay, what's that?
Is throughout all these times when Claire is like, oh no, I have to help these people. They're sick, they're injured, they're terrible, they're murderous, scum. And yet some guy comes in her home. Goodbye. I'm going to shoot you. And it's like a deathly wound. Claire never misses a shot in this episode.
Really?
You know who does?
Jamie.
Jamie.
Jamie totally does.
All the jabronis. But Claire Fraser. I don't know. I know what she's been doing. She's been practicing probably extra with Roger to make him feel better. Like when Bree's not around, she's probably like, Roger, let's sneak in somewhere practice so you can like feel more confident. Sharpshooting skills. Left and right. You want a hand pistol? You want a long gun? I've got it all. Claire doesn't friggin' miss a shot. Shooting people left and right, getting guys in the bums.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. Shoots a guy in his back.
She got it. She has it, man.
She's There's no doctor law right now happening with sharpshooter Claire.
Just dropping guys left and right. You know where I really feel like the episode really sang is when Ian finally shows up and Lizzie comes running out and she says, they took him. And at that point, you could like see Ian, you could see something in Ian that just clicked.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, okay, that's it. And then all of a sudden when, you know, Jamie's going to take a piss and Ian shows up and there he is, then you could feel you were outside of the lagging middle. You were outside of the traveling and just all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We got to a point where we're like, okay, something is going to happen here outside of what we expect. When Ian shows up, that's when things take a big turn.
And you know Ian knows of the secret trap door in the basement.
Oh, yeah.
Did that give anybody else just like feelings of, what are those people, the survivalists?
Oh, yes.
You know when the survivalists all kind of came out when the pandemic started and they were all like, see, we told ya. This is where we have all those seeds and I've got my basement of guns. You know? But we watched a few of those YouTube videos,
yeah.
We being me, because yeah. I didn't know what was going to happen. There were aliens flying around the Pentagon, guys. Did we all forget murder hornets? Anyway, I watched
murder hornets. Guys, I did forget about
that. I know. Everyone did except me. So I watched some of those YouTube
Doomsday
tutorials.
Doomsday preppers. Thank you, Megan, on Facebook.
Oh, my gosh. And you know what I loved about the guns? I know I'm going back to the guns.
Yep.
But Claire was in the World War. And yes, she was a nurse, sure. But you know they taught those nurses how to shoot. And Claire now gets all the guns she wants.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, military training? I got this.
Sella guns. That's what we're going to call them. Sella guns, yes, from now on.
Yes. So I agree. You know that the tides are changing. The tides are turning. When Ian rolls up, Lizzie tells him they're gone, and he's got the extra key to the basement.
Sella guns.
Your cousin from Boston.
You know what actually I thought of during that scene?
I thought of the Sella gun scene.
Okay. I thought of The Matrix. We're going to need guns. Okay. Lots of guns.
Nice. See, you went classier, and I went to the Doomsday Preppers.
I referenced, you know, a cinema historic experience, and you referenced Doomsday Preppers.
Here I am. I'm like too afraid to own a gun, and I'm like, maybe a hatchet. So as Jamie and Claire in this house, you know, get the shutters, Claire. She failed that task. Mm-hmm. They were shooting too much. They take that gorgeous dining room table with all the food on it.
Oh, yeah. Just notice the candles.
With a lit freaking candle.
Two lit candles. Don't tell. That didn't pass by me. I saw that.
Just knocking it over.
Yep.
All of us just held our breath for a second, even though we know it's going to be okay. It's not okay. Taking that, moving the bureau. We get to have little moments of Adso. Eating that leftover food.
And there was also that brilliant shot of Adso crossing the screen as Jamie and Claire were laying by the fire. And if, like, in case you missed it, they included an Adso sound effect.
Oh, they did.
Of a meow.
They have added so much Adso, knowing that we've wanted to see him. However, I've been so nervous for that wee little kitty because
I don't think he makes it out of the fire.
Oh my goodness gracious. I'm like, he is such a chill cat. There have been guns blowing off. You think about animals on the 4th of July when the fireworks are miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Adso was pretty chill.
Just
if that
walking
was
around.
Our cat, she would have had her hair still puffed out. Oh, the tail guaranteed. Would have been like 5 miles big. Oh my gosh. Just eating that food. But that little moment by the fireside, you know, we've talked now a bit about the house being blown to smithereens. And then they do get to start to have some quiet time, which I don't understand, but we'll get back to that.
Well, what do you mean?
Before Tom Christie came mm-hmm. to the rescue and said, why don't you have a good night's sleep? Go have sex. Okay, you can have sex in peace. I understand that.
Sure.
But prior to Tom Christie, Fisher Folk, Lady from Beauty and the Beast, Burn the Witch, when it's the jabronis outside
mm-hmm.
with guns and Claire and Jamie inside with guns, mm-hmm. and then they're just having this little snuggle fest, eat glass food. Why didn't the jabronis just go in? You know, you know how he was saying like, oh, it's going to be a long night. They might burn our house right now. Why didn't the jabronis just burn their house down? Why didn't they just storm them? There were so many.
Yeah, it feels... Well, isn't it because Hiram Crombie showed up and they wouldn't let...
No, but I'm saying before the Fisher Folk arrived.
Oh, you're right. Sorry.
Because, things change when the Fisher Folk come.
Yes.
But I'm wondering before then, they had so many more people.
Yeah, it's very writerly.
And you just see them on the outside.
It was...
Is it... Or you know how... There was a moment where Jamie said, I want you to go into these other rooms and I want you to pretend that you're Josiah so that that way they might think that there's more people in this house. Yeah, and that was very smart.
That's a...
But I didn't feel that way. I would have liked to have someone from the safety patrol be like, how many are in there? Like, I would have liked just that to give me a hesitancy as to why they didn't go any further. Was it just because that one guy got shot in the tummy? That he's like, never mind, don't go in.
No, no. I think it's a writerly thing.
Because Lionel Brown would have shot Jamie. There's that moment where Claire yells duck.
Yeah.
You know, and Jamie, he's like beating off. There's like five guys off of him and he's trying to find the knife. And then he's standing up. And Lionel Brown has his...
He shoots at him.
Yes.
He just misses.
Yes, because Jamie ducks.
Yeah.
So it's not that he doesn't want to kill Jamie. I don't know. It's just kind of weird.
Yeah,
for
me. It's because the show needed them to have their scene. That's what it really comes down to.
Because they were cuddling by the fire, obviously nervous. Both of them vocally nervous. And I love how Claire says, you know, being with you just makes me feel so peaceful. Like and I love that about this couple. They both don't know what's going to happen. Jamie says, we may die. We may have our house burned to smithereens. The newspapers are often wrong. So I loved that moment for them while I was confused.
Sherry here on Facebook says, I think Richard Brown wants the house. He's jealous of Jamie's good fortune.
I'm saying Lionel.
Yeah, whatevs.
I've been talking about him so much this season that I'm like, that's whose name is on my mind.
Now, if there was a scene where Richard was saying, said to somebody, hey, don't fire the house.
Yes.
Because I want it.
Yes.
That house is mine.
Yes.
Now I'm buying it.
Agreed.
I'm buying it. But
we needed just a little explanation.
I have to squint to see that. And I don't know if that was actually the show's intent. Right? Because so the difference between when I say the show is just showing you as opposed to telling you, the show is showing you with intent, Wilmington. Right? It's showing you with intent to give you the temperature of the colony in that very moment, in that very place. And it's showing you, it's not telling you. This is doing neither. It's neither telling you nor is it showing you. It's just expecting you to fill in the gap. Do you see the difference?
Yes.
I wish there was some... If that was the intent, I'm buying that intent. I just don't know if it was. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agreed. Whether it's storming the house, burning the house, I agree. I would have just wanted a little something. So that was part of the reason why I couldn't give this a 5+, is I didn't understand that bit.
Sure.
And is it Claire who even says something like, why are they not coming in? Or, you know, when Jamie's saying it's going to be a long night and they may burn the house. So there's these variables and I didn't understand why they didn't. And maybe that's okay because we are with Jamie and Claire and they don't know why either. So I guess one can sit with that.
Sure. Well, you know, before we continue, let's thank our partners in this season. All right, Mary, it's a little too late for the burn supper because it happened last night for us here, at least. And that's okay. But you know what you want to do for the next burn supper?
Okay.
You go to scarletshop.com.
Yes.
That's what you do. You want to know why?
Why?
You got to look good.
You do.
You got to get taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing with me. When I go to a place, what do I always say, Mary? What do I always say?
When you go where?
When I go to a place and I want to get service, what do I say? Got to feel like I'm getting taken care of.
Yes.
Got to feel like I'm getting taken care of. And that's what they do. They set you up with all the history. They set you up with all the appointments. They talking to you, describing all the different products, describing to you all the different wools and plaids and the meanings and everything. They make you feel like they're taken care of.
They truly do. It's a beautiful experience.
Yes, and I love going there. I love talking to the people there because they got these like authentic Scottish accents. Even better. They even got a store in New York now. Like they came across the pond.
I wonder if people are like, and then that Blake Lawson with his authentic Boston accent.
I know.
It's authentic. Continue.
So, I don't know. You go there. You get set up. You get set up for the Highland Games. You get set up for the next Bar and Sapa. I don't know. Maybe you got a St. Andrew Society running around in your
maybe
state.
You want to go to the Tartan Parade next year.
Who knows? Get all the stuff. Get the stuff for the women. Get the stuff for the men. And you know what the best thing is?
What?
When you shop at ScotlandShop.com, mm-hmm. what you do is you go there with a discount code and coupon code. It's a discount code. It's Outlander. And
easy to
it's
remember.
From us because we take care of you. We want them to know that you're from us. And they will make you feel like you're taken care of.
Love it.
Oh, you see how I wrapped that up there
I
like
do.
That? It's almost like I'm a professional podcaster. Oh. Imagine that.
Look at you.
So, what do we want to do with the next part?
So, we get our white flag of truce from Jabrowny, from Richard, who I've been calling Lionel. Oh my God. Sorry, podcast listener.
And I could see if Richard said, hey, all right, everybody stop shooting. I get it. White flag moment. Because he does that. Yeah, he's doing a parlay. All right. Well, he's doing a parlay.
Okay.
In Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah. All right. But after the parlay, we're back to war. It's over. We're done.
Well, because Jamie shoots it at him, shoots at his foot, shoots his hat. This is probably his best
agreed,
hat.
Agreed, but then he goes back.
Mary, shot his best hat.
Mary, you're right. You're absolutely right. The reasoning behind the house not getting fired, in my opinion, non-existent.
No, it would have made sense if he just said something. I want that house. I want those teal walls. I want that table. I want Adso. That would have been me. Can I please have the kitty?
I know, right?
All right. So then, of course, we cut to our big talk between Roger and Bree. And
yes.
This is when they're out in the woods and Wee Jemmy is just playing around and they have a great conversation. And, you know, this is where we can have our little time traveler talk, Blake. Where's our little sound clip?
What?
Where we're going. Oh, we don't need roads.
Oh, I don't. Oh, okay. Sorry. Hold on.
I'll just do it. Where we're going.
No, no, no. I got the sound clip. You got to give me a second.
Okay.
Hey, Doc, you better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
All right, Mama.
So if you yourself were in the future.
Uh-huh.
And if I was in the future, if we were Roger and Bree.
If we were in the past.
Yes.
Not the future.
Sorry, Back to the Future always messes me up. So if we were from the future, there we go. If you were from the future, say you were Roger, I was Bree. Oh, cool. You're Rick Rankin. And we had a kid. When would you want to tell the child all the stuff, any of the stuff? How would you go about this? Because Roger and Bree go through this discussion. When do we tell him? Do we tell
him? You know what? Interesting. It's an interesting discussion. It's one of the few bits of the Roger and Bree stuff that I really liked.
Hmm.
Maybe it's just because I'm a parent now, and like you have to have these kind of conversations as a parent. You know, like, when do we do this? And when do we show him Star Wars? And when do I take him to go see Goodfellas? Apparently for my dad, it was when I was 7.
I love that these are the conversations that you have to figure out. And for me, it's explaining menstruation to my daughter. And I say, well, just like chickens lay eggs, mammals have eggs that are inside. And it's very different. That's how I explain it to an almost 7-year-old. You're welcome.
So cute.
No, I'm just loving that yours is Goodfellas and I'm here having
menstruation chats.
Yeah.
You know, Mary, that's a great question, and it was an interesting question posed in the show. Here's what I'll say. They run a risk of...
I don't care about them. I want to know about you. This isn't a show. This is about you, Blake.
Yeah, okay, so...
And Blake are back in time.
Okay, we're back in time.
You know I'm complaining.
You gotta do the Huey Lewis song.
You're
gonna
get
back in time.
You do not want to sleep in a tent. Gonna be so freaking anxious all night.
Oh my goodness. Just
someone's gonna come.
Just camping out in the middle of nowhere. Oh, that's misery.
That
no
would
thanks.
Not do well for us. You'd get all the bugs on you.
Oh, I would just be miserable.
Okay.
I'd be the most miserable person on this planet.
We actually wouldn't leave the ridge.
No, we'd be like, you know what? We're just gonna stay
in the
seminary
basement.
Thing? Yeah, whatever.
Goodbye.
Yeah. Give me all the guns. I'll stay with the cellar guns. Thank you so
much. I'll go on the University of Arizona website. I'll make my own degree with some letterhead from Lord John.
University of Phoenix, what not Arizona.
Whatevs. Still out west.
Hey, at least it's the same. Hey, you know what? Stats are for nerds.
Preach. Stats okay, so Blake, we're back in time. We have a child. I bring up this conversation. When should we tell them about this? Or do we ever?
Okay, so my answer to all of this would be...
You like, tell pretend we're going for a walk. Okay, we just got some blueberries or something. Hey, Blake. And we're like this out. Hey, Blake.
Yeah, Mary.
So I was just thinking, like, you know, when should we tell Reese about us being from the future?
Hold on, these blueberries are full.
You know, like, we're going to know about the war coming up.
Yeah, that's right.
So, what do you think we should do?
I don't think we should tell them about the war, Mary, necessarily. Like, we shouldn't tell them, like, hey, don't worry about it. Everything's going to be fine. We're going to win. But you know what? That's a good question, Mary. And I think we should tell him.
You never say my questions are good questions.
That's not true. I say that all the time.
On podcasts.
I would say that the sooner the better.
You tell me, Mary, it's 10:30 at night.
That is very true.
Why are you asking me this question about time traveling?
Why are you asking me about the meaning parenting? Of life at 10:30 at night when I'm trying to go to bed?
What do you think we should do?
I think we should tell him as soon as possible. And maybe it's not right now because we run the risk of him going off.
So that's different than as soon as possible.
Well, not like, hey, we're going to go have this conversation like in 10 minutes.
Okay.
I'm thinking maybe within the next couple of years we should tell him because, I mean, what if we have to go back to the future?
I don't want to go back. My mom's here and I'm working on my water wheel.
Yeah, but God forbid we have to go back for whatever reason. Like, who knows? All of a sudden, we have this kid and then he goes from riding in carriages to flying cars.
How is he going
to
keep his mouth shut? Kids are very impressionable at this age.
Kids make things up all the time.
Look at Jermaine. Look at what that jabroni did.
Kids make things up all the time.
How could we say French? Jabroni.
Kids make things up all the time. They got imaginations. Yeah, I'm from the future.
Yeah, but everyone thinks my mom's a witch.
Well,
now I'm doing hocus pocus.
Yeah, but you're going
stuff.
To, we're going to
I
this,
need
we're
matches.
Not, we're not going to be, we're not going to be with you, Mom. We're going to be somewhere totally somewhere else.
For like a month, Roger, well, Blake.
You tell them as soon as you can, and then
we're going to go back home.
Then the newness of it's over, and then we're just back to normal life.
Don't you think he's going to have questions?
Of course, and then we have to be honest. Gotta be honest. You gotta have an honest conversation with your kids so that you don't give them all the copays. You only give them some of the copays. When inevitably, and this is just me saying this, I know that if I'm from the future and I'm back in the past, and if there is one thing wrong with my kid that I know that can get healed in a heartbeat in the future, then I'm going to the future. I'm going. I don't care what anybody says. I'm going because that's my kid and I have a responsibility to take care of that kid. If there's one thing wrong with you, my wife, that I know can get handled in the future and can't right now, I'm going to the future.
Well, why won't you get me ramen when I want it?
I always get... What did I do today, Mary?
You did just get me ice cream.
That's right. That is... I was so supposed to be doing prep for the show and what did I do?
Okay, I don't feel good. I took lots of naps today. I'm a mammal. I'll put it like that. Something else is happening that I had to explain today. So I got ice cream. You're welcome, world. Whatevs, man. We're all human.
I'm not saying that. That's not the problematic part.
You know what I think?
What?
Here's what I think. I think about the same time that a truth about someone around Yule. I'm just saying this just in case I'm like on
sure.
a speaker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When that might be something that you could bridge the conversation with. Maybe that's the age that you can start to do time travel stuff.
Yeah, well, how old's Jemmy right now? What, like
he looks
six?
Really young.
Four?
He looks really young in the show.
Three?
Not that young. I'd say he looks like
four. Yeah, four. I'll give you four.
I'm not telling a four-year-old. You know what? When you're the magical age of 11 and you're about to get your Hogwarts letter, that's when you know. That's when you know.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Come on, Mary.
So, we've got them walking through the forest. Jemmy does the cutest little thing. Says hi to the baby. Oh.
Aww.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And then as he's doing that, he's got all that gorgeous hair rubbing all over his mom.
Yeah.
And you know what's right there, too. the hairiest chest this side of the Mississippi. Rick Rankin. Oh.
His side of the Mississippi.
He's got hair, man.
All the hair.
He does not need a Snuggie. Probably gets really hot at night. So here's all this lice. And Roger's like, oh, I want to have a matching birthmark cut off my hair. And then we see him having sex. Oh, no, that was before.
Yeah.
But we know how much hair is on you, Roger.
Right.
You need to take a special lice soap.
You got lice everywhere,
bath.
Guy.
We saw your hairy butt.
You need to go full dolphin.
Yes. And there's Brie, you know, with her sex scene of like, come here, lice, flipping it, flopping it back and forth, right for the take thing. Come on over. Oh, the pubic lice were having a heyday during that scene.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I just went there.
Yes, you
but
did.
But I just loved all this lice, and we saw so much hair in the previous
all
bit.
All the hair. Every hair bit of hair there ever was.
Bree's the one cutting it, and all of her hair is like right next to
Wee
Jimmy.
Just like touching it, you know.
Oh, man, that's not how it works here.
No.
Gotta go get those special combs and the special shampoo and super cuts.
It's just weird.
It's so gross. I hate lice. I've never had it, knock on wood. Never in my life.
So what else in this episode do you want to discuss?
We're going to do the Brie and Roger sex, Blake, because I know you're not into it, but I'm here for it.
I wasn't into their flirting. I will say this. The visual language of the sex scenes, both Roger and Brie and Jamie and Claire both rhymed very well. In your face, right up and in them, like, you know, and
that's how the lice felt.
And that's how you know they're making a purposeful choice in trying to contrast the two stories.
Yes.
Right. And as Angela duly noted in her recap, you know, there is this the journey of turmoil with Jamie and Claire, and it's contrasted against the journey of peace and joy and revelation for Brie and Roger. And on paper, I think it works very well. Just the execution between the characters, for me, it fell a little flat for me.
The Roger?
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. I enjoyed it. It was very different. We've gotten very used to the Jamie-Claire sex, which is very, very different. Plus, it was in a very passionate, tense place. We got the butt crack, as I said.
Mm-hmm. Lots of butt crack.
Just, hey, you know, we're here. We're here for it.
Hey, I'm not kink shaming.
They got to do some different stuff.
A lot of people are into it.
Cat's pregnant, okay? You got to, like, make do with what you got. Okay, we can't have some boobs. What can we get? Can we get some butt? Nice.
All right, give me the butt.
Give me the butt. But obviously, you know, we're so emotionally invested in Jamie and Claire, and we've been with them all these years. We know what they like to do. Mm-hmm. She gets her little like finger in his mouth. There is action. But we're not privy to that much with Roger and Brie. And it still is a younger relationship. And I thought it was rather cute because their verbal foreplay is not Jamie and Claire. Jamie and Claire's verbal foreplay is when they're fighting.
Yes.
And they're calling each other names and they're throwing stuff at each other. And then you've got a very different sexual dynamic between Roger and Brie. Vroom, vroom. You know, like maybe we should go the scenic route. But here's the scoop, Blake. As you like, because that's not your style.
Well, it's not that it's not my style. It's just that there's 0.0 chemistry. When, again, in contrasting to Sam and Kat, who have 10 out of 10 chemistry.
I am much more into the Jamie and Claire
shenanigans,
as sadly Blake has to know, because Blake will be like, come on, don't you want to, like, you know? And I'm like, nope. Whatevs. I'm being real.
Wait, what?
I don't want to have the scenic route, okay?
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Let's go. Giddy up. Right? I don't want to do the Roger Brie route. That's not for me. Lots of people, it is. Good for you.
Oh my God.
Whatevs, man.
Mary.
We're all human, okay? We ain't nothing but mammals, okay?
Mary.
I'm sorry.
What
My dad doesn't listen to this podcast. Nothing bad. Nothing bad. Whatever. Everybody knows people have sex, okay? So, what I'm just saying is that there's different strokes for different folks. People like different kinds of foreplay. And that Brie and Roger, that's for them. Good for them. It's not my cup of tea. And I'm more here for the Jamie and Claire sex. But I'm happy for them. And it's cute. It's cute. And I did like that I need to move because of my bump. That was cute.
Yes.
And she gives, you know, has a little nickname Ace for him thrown in there.
Oh, Mary.
And they're worried about, will Jimmy wake up? It's just, you know, like new parent sex.
Oh, man. You make me laugh.
In the tent.
You make me laugh, man. It's so funny.
You're welcome. Listen, if anybody has to, like, push stop at this point, they're like the witch woman.
Witch. I'm going to make a fun of Henri Christian.
Witch. She's a witch.
And if anyone had a different opinion of what I would be like.
Oh, man.
Y'all don't know me.
That's true. Good point. Good point. I think there are some things to really like about, like, I really liked Roger's reaction. And I even really liked Bree's reaction to the whole revelation.
I just love how you contradict yourself. Yep.
Well, I'm trying to be positive.
I know,
Mary.
I know. And I agree with you. I found it quite cute for their relationship. Like, it's very different. The way they speak with each other, their playfulness. I just think it is. It's very cute. They're having sex in a tent right in the next room from their son. And she's pregnant and they're on the ground and they're from a very different time.
Yes.
I think it's wild. Talking about going 75 miles per hour.
Yeah, vroom, vroom.
And then also talking about their breakup.
That is a nice bit right there. Like, that was, hey, we almost broke up that day. And yada, yada. Like, you know.
We did break up. And then I traveled through time to be back with you.
You know, it's some of it's very good. And you have to appreciate all the parts that are very good. And I think that's a fair thing to do. In addition to being constructively critical of some of the things that don't succeed as much. So, Mary, with that in mind, my question to you, and this is an open question, this is an open-ended question, which is, this season as a whole, now that we've seen the entire season.
We're only halfway through the episode.
Well, what else do you got?
Claire and Jamie getting stoned, Tom Christie giving some soup.
Oh, all right. Ian's
saving the day.
Does this episode confirm that Tom Christie is, in fact, in love with Claire?
What do you think, Blake?
I think the show makes an effort to say that he is, but I think they do it poorly.
Okay.
I think that they're trying to get us to understand that Tom, and I have an outlandish theory. Should I do the outlandish theory right now?
We're here for it.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Here we go. All right, you ready for the outlandish theory? Here we go. Yeah. The outlandish theory is brought to you by
WeBox.
WeBox. You go to WeBox. As a matter of fact, go there and just get all the stuff because WeBox freaking rocks.
WeBox should be named Treat Yourself.
Treat Yourself Box. Because they get you all five different gifts and treasures from that are worth way more than the cost of the box. And they're often exclusive, and they can't be bought outside of Scotland. Usually it's, you know, a delicious treat, or it's the little things of tartans. Again, it's just things that you just can't get outside of Scotland. It comes right from there. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things, too, comes wrapped up in Scotland newspaper.
It's so cute. You know, this would be a great Mother's Day gift. If you have a mother in your life who loves Scotland or Outlander, or if your family really messes up Mother's Day, you treat yourself and you make it your makeup Mother's Day present.
All right, so here we go. Here's my outlandish theory. Tom knows who killed Malva, and that's why he is trying to save Claire, because he knows that he's done wrong in certain ways, that his family has done wrong, especially Alan, and he's trying to make up for it.
What's Alan doing wrong?
Alan is the one that's snitching to the Browns. And he's trying to make up for it, and that's why he's saying, if you guys died, I couldn't live with that on my conscience. I couldn't live with that on my head. It won't happen because of me. I'm going to sit here and protect. I'm going to come with you and protect you to make sure that all this stuff happens, that you get taken care of. So he knows who killed Malva. And my thought is it's not him. It wasn't him that killed Malva.
Now that his hand's all better?
What do you mean?
His hand got fixed from Claire.
Well, yeah. I don't think it was him, because if it were him, he wouldn't be around.
He wouldn't do that mortal sin.
No, he wouldn't be around. But he knows who did, and he's trying to save Claire and Jamie from that. And it wasn't him that, it wasn't Tom who put the baby in Malva either. My sense is that he knows it's Alan.
Ew.
Alan, who did both. That's my guess.
And is standing there with the Fisher folk saying, burn the witch. Alan's with the Fisher folk peeps.
That's what I'm saying. Because Alan wants Jamie and Claire dead. D-E-D dead. Wants them out.
And you think Tom has the answers to this clue game?
I think Tom does.
He knows that, and it's Colonel Mustard.
Yes. With
the revolver? With the knife?
With some kind of...
Not the candlestick.
Yes. So I just got the... I've got a feeling that Tom knows who it is, and that's why he's protecting Jamie and Claire. That's why he stepped up to take care of them.
Well, collectively, we all say... Interesting.
Mark me.
Please hang up and try again.
Mark at zero, dude. Telling you. Mark at zero.
I do love when Tom Christie says they will not kill or harm Jamie. Like, Tom really makes sure to say that to Claire. And we get quite a bit of Claire voiceover when she's in the cart, you know, being mm-hmm. dragged away. And she's saying, well, maybe Tom really thinks that Jamie's going to be okay. Or maybe he knows he's dead and he's just trying to make me feel better. But this sucks. And then Claire's in jail. And we get that scene with her and Tom. And of course, we get the credits scene of him touching her hand.
Yeah. And that's why I'm saying that the show is trying to tell you that Tom is in love with Claire. Because if it was just, I really like Claire and she's cool. And like they're trying to keep a mystery of it all. And they're not 100% sure. They're mm-hmm. not showing that hand-touching scene. They're not showing that. But they are. And they did. And Tom is being like, I'm not leaving at all. I'm here to protect you. Like, a man that's in the friend zone does that.
Oh.
I'm just throwing that out there.
Interesting.
So, there you go.
We get, of course, Jamie on the beach. And Ian saves the day mm-hmm. with all of his friends. We get the hand shot and then the eye shot. We get John Quincy Myers.
John JQM, baby.
He is back.
Showing up out of nowhere.
He's back.
Let's just go. He's back.
Giddy up. The grand.
I'm here for the JQM.
Oh, yes. I am so excited. But it does. It brings back memories of you know, all the Klansmen going and saving Claire.
Yes.
From Blackjack, you know, yes, making absolutely. This huge plan to go rescue her. So I'm excited for season 7.
Well, it's even reminiscent of season 5 when they go rescue Claire.
Yeah, but less rapey. Like, that was like a dark situation. Whereas
yes.
the music in this felt more, come on, gang, let's go get her.
Yes. I really liked that final shot of them all on the horses, on the beach, going off. Yeah, good shot. You know, and this episode provided actually a lot of different scenes in the opening montage, in the credit scenes.
These past couple of episodes have really been just such a treat as a longtime show watcher, with familiar faces, familiar musical themes, little voice bits mm-hmm. that we've got going on through the hauntings of Claire. Mm-hmm. So I really think they did a lovely job, knowing that they had a short amount of time to work with, knowing that they were going to have to put a pin in major storylines.
Yeah.
But that being said, they are currently filming season 7. I think they finished episode 2 today.
Oh.
And it's going to be a long season. So,
yeah, 16 episodes to my knowledge. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I
believe that's it.
To my knowledge, it's 16.
And this was
So even though it may not feel like a regular finale for you, Blake, I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. I think that it was beautiful watching, beautifully tragic watching this house be shot apart. I loved seeing Jamie and Claire be scared together. Mm-hmm. We've seen them be scared for their lives apart, whether it's through sickness or war or just they are apart from each other. And this was a really cool moment to see how they handled it, to see their lovemaking, knowing that they could be very well dead the next day. So I just, I loved seeing, you know, Ian come save the day after how they've had to take care of him so mm-hmm. many times. And yeah, I'm a big fan, big fan.
Yeah. Again, I think they're really, I think the episode really, 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 really sang when it came to Jamie and Claire discussing their own fates within the context of the episode itself. Mm-hmm. Because again, it's the exploration isn't, oh, are Jamie and Claire going to live? We know they're going to. Like when Claire is getting taken away, I know she's going to be okay. When Jamie wakes up in the middle of the beach and he's like, you're going to Scotland, and you know, and I know he's going to be okay. It's going to happen. It's going to be fine. It's what are the characters doing in the middle of it all when they're trying to process their own fate? They're trying to process their own mortality and exploring that in a patient and calm setting that this episode allowed for.
Yeah.
That is when the episode really does what it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are at an hour 11, Mary. So I don't want to...
I'm starting to get a little tired. Can you see me slowly?
Slowly deflating. So here's my question, Mary. Now that we've seen this season in its entirety, irrespective of my thoughts on the finale or whatever shortcomings the finale.
I loved the finale. Gave it a five.
Or what I'm saying is any shortcomings that the finale may have had.
Like the dirty fingers.
The season on the whole, the season writ large, if yes. you will, is it a successful season? Is it one that tells a complete story? And where do you rank this season among the others?
I do not think that it tells a complete story as it leaves on an obvious cliffhanger. But to me, this story was about kind of the frailty of Jamie and Claire, particularly mm-hmm. Claire, and getting to know the younger generation
mm-hmm.
and really the family unit as a whole, that there is no one who is... You know, it's the whole thing where a bundle of sticks, like one stick by itself can break, but bundled together, you yeah. can't break them. So to me, this season was about this family, was about the trials that they've gone through, how they pull each other through it, and also the frailty of Claire and how Jamie is now pulling her through it. Now, Ian is helping, you know, pull them through it.
Yeah.
So to me, it's just the family unit really being there for each other.
Yeah. I think this season was very, very extraordinarily successful in exploring Claire's mental health and in doing it in a manner that you don't quite see that often on television.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not that it hasn't happened or appeared before, but yes, I think it's a unique way to tell a story about a main character, especially a female main character. I think the show succeeded very well in that. And if I were to squint and make an argument that it told a story of change,
mm-hmm.
If I had to make an argument, this is my argument. Because and again, let me preface this.
We do have no. I need to tell you, Ruth Ann Carr says you should listen to some of Meryl's comments. They did not know they were cutting the season short until halfway through. We have to cut them a break due to the cold weather, COVID, and of course, a pregnant Katrina.
Yes.
So
okay, Well, let's put a pin in my previous argument. Right now, my argument to that is fair. You found out halfway through.
You're going to get lots of those same comments right now.
You found out halfway through that, okay, we're going to have to put a hold on things here. We're going to have to figure out where to stop. Okay, you found out halfway through. That means it was probably happening about a quarter of the way, like where you were like, oh, are we going to be able to do this? And then you had to make the decision And then you finally make the decision halfway through. Because those kinds of decisions don't happen on a dime. They don't go, okay, we're stopping everything, sorry. Like, you have schedules, and you have people, and you got a whole range of things. Never mind the work stoppage that happened due to the conditions that were being held. I mean, that's it.
That's
the dirty little secret of this season, by the way. That there was a work stoppage from the union on the set because of working conditions.
Yes.
Okay? Just throwing that out.
Yes.
There.
But you throw that in together, and this is their season during COVID. You know, like, the season 5 ended as COVID was beginning, mm-hmm. you know? So just putting this all into perspective and knowing that's why I'm okay with it not being a complete feeling season, a complete story. But what it was to me, I think they did a beautiful job creating this tapestry of this very complex family.
Okay, so my argument to the, oh, well, they had to switch and they had to do the things and they, you know, they had to, the next 4 episodes or in the next season, all that other stuff. My argument to that is, okay, how can a show like Succession and Better Call Saul create their best seasons yet amidst a COVID-riddled set? How can they do that with Bob Odenkirk suffering a heart attack on set?
But many people think that this is one of the best seasons yet. So it's just your personal opinion, my love.
Okay, fair enough.
So let's get off your little, like, high horse of crabbiness.
But what I will say, if I have to squint and make an argument that there was a...
No, there's no squinting.
Wait, hold on. If I have to make an argument that the episode did very well in what it was intended to do, the season started.
I want to say your phrases to you. If I have to squint and tell you that you did a great job making dinner.
What I'm saying is, if I had to say, okay,
no, you don't have to do anything.
Okay, fine. Then I will make the argument that the show did well in its storytelling in one aspect. The season started off with the Frasers at the big house, with all the people buzzing around, the family there, all the things are happening around
it. All the kids.
And then the final episode, the season ends with Jamie saying, "No one's coming." Mm-hmm. Okay? If there's an argument to be made, it's that. They went from being the family to being left in the dust. And everything in between is the story. But, well, I'm not even going to get there because I don't want everybody to get all mad at me for being negative. It's just like there are certain things that if you know your show is coming to a close and you have to pivot, there are certain things you just have to do to tell a complete story.
They don't need to do a complete story. There's season 7. We all know it's coming.
But that's the argument, though. Is the argument... Should this season's quality be contingent upon next season? And that's a logical debate. It's a fair debate to have.
Many people, Blake, think that this season was great, myself included.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that you guys are not entitled to your opinion, but this is partly my show as well, and I'm allowed to have my opinion.
Yes, you are.
And sometimes... it's okay to have a conversation of, hey, is this handled the way that it should have been? Or is this the quality that we've come to expect from a show that we love and adore? Right? Like, think of how incredible Dragonfly and Amber was. Right? And that's the Outlander that I love, that I adore.
Yeah. Okay. Let's... wrap it up.
Okay, fair enough. Anything else you'd like to say about this episode?
I cannot wait for the listener feedback episode.
Me too. I'm excited.
Good, good. I think you're hungry or something.
Gotta go have my ice cream I bought before show prep.
If any of you have something to say, please, please, please head on over to maryandblake.com and use the SpeakPipe feature.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
So you can leave your voicemail. Of course, you want to know where you're from. It is a 90-second cutoff, so you do want to make sure that you are nice and quick with that. We also do take a lot of our feedback at jointhenerdclan.com.
So that's a good place to go.
What? Yeah, absolutely. Go to jointhenerdclan.com. share your feedback there.
Yes. And we, of course, are going to be having our listener feedback episode later this week. It will not be during the weekdays. It'll most likely be towards the weekend just because we do have a very busy week. It is my birthday week and I'm super excited, but that also means that my limited energy is going to be used up a wee bit more than it normally is. And thank you all for your prayers this season. Going through the long COVID that I have a start date of May 17th mm-hmm. for my long COVID clinic. So I'm really, really excited to be seeing some modern day Claires to help me stop feeling so weird.
All right, Mavi, you ready to close this out?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Give props to Fergus and his new burn onion. Well done.
Oh, yes.
Well done, Fergus.
Little do we know that the actual onion art of paper came from New Bern Onion.
so proud of you, Fergus. Aww. Thank you all so much for an amazing season 6. Blake and I have been talking a lot already about season 7, which seems like it's going to be so far in the future. But we've got some big plans. I'm hoping to have more energy by then.
Yes.
We do want to let you know that if you're a book reader and you're listening to this in live time, you are going to want to head on over to the Outlander Cast Clan Gathering Book Club on Facebook, as our Outlander Cast staff member Angela Hickey leads a show episode from a book reader's perspective analysis, and that is going to be taking place on Saturday, May 7th at 2 p.m. Eastern. And even if you hear this in the future, you can go watch the replay because there's replays available, which would be super great. And we do want to remind you that we have blog posts coming out from the amazingly talented staff at OutlanderCast.com, and they will be coming throughout Droughtlander to keep you satiated with Outlander content as we wait for the amazing season 7.
How many times are you going to say amazing?
As many as I need to make up for your pessimism.
Oh, get out of here. You guys are all thin-skinned. Come on, we're just having a conversation. Mm-hmm. It's okay to conversate. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you like Mary and Blake conversate, and go to maryandblake.com. We do have tons and tons of more podcasts coming out. Actually, as soon as Outlander is over, once we finish the listener feedback episode, we are diving right into Bridgerton immediately. And I'm very excited for Bridgerton. And as soon as This Is Us ends, we are diving right back into The Last Kingdom for season 5, which I'm very excited about as well. So, oh man, we got some good stuff coming up. And amidst all of that, the Potiverse is coming back too.
Yay!
We're going to be celebrating all things Harry Potter. Oh, man.
Just we're still keeping busy. But now, you know, obviously we've had to press pause on a bunch of things to take a little breath. But Outlander is not done. Dinifash, we are here and we are going to be hearing all about your opinions on this episode. So stay tuned.
You want to hear a bunch of people just come at and try to pound me to the center of the earth. Let's go, baby.
Stay tuned and get on our text reminder service if you're not on it already. If you're in the U.S., text the phone to 81010 in the message field at Clan Fraser, so the at symbol Clan Fraser, all together one word. You will get a text reminder to let you know when we will be going live. And I'm just super excited for that episode. Yeah, all right, my friends, have a great night. On that note, my name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
And you've been listening to Outlander Cast.